Ben McAdams, let's go left here to Ted.
Good morning, Ted Knowlton, WFRC staff. I administer the Regional Growth Committee.
John Barber, Morton County Council.
Jim Rowdy, West York City Mayor.
Don Rowdy, South York City.
Ari Brennan, Vision Utah.
Bob Dandoy, Roy City.
Jim Harvey, Weber County.
Danny McConkey, UDOT Commissioner.
Erin Mendenhall, Salt Lake City Council, but Air Quality Board here for you.
Evan Curtis, State Planning Coordinator, Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Bill Summercorn, Salt Lake County, representing the Utah Association of Counties.
Jeff Harris with UDOT, Planning Director.
Heather McConkey, WFRC staff.
Yeah, we'll go back here then, and then we'll go over to the side of the room.
Gary McLaren, Congresswoman, BLO's office.
Evelyn Everton, Sandy City.
Michael Malloy with Pyramid City.
Roger Borgnick with Utah for Better Transportation.
Russell Wake, Salt Lake City Council staff.
Linda Johnson, Blue, Utah.
Ned Hacker with WFRC.
Sam Flynn with the Office of Salt Lake County Council Member Richard Snow.
Rachel Adams with Lita City Council.
Come on, Candy, you have to. See you. All right, Andrews.
Andrew Gruber with WFRC.
Reed Ewing with the University.
Wade Bittner, Tooele County.
Amy Winter Newton, Salt Lake County.
Mike Daly, Syracuse City.
Katie Witt, Caseville.
Katie Gerard, Wasatch Front Staff.
Mark Allen, Washington Terrace City.
Norm Searle, Rivervale City.
Laura Hansen, UTA Staff.
Chrissy Dahlberg, Wasatch Front Staff.
Hallie New, WFRC Staff.
Alex Wright, WFRC Staff.
Lee Davenport, WFRC Staff.
Carly Hollis, WFRC Staff.
Bert Granberg, also with WFRC.
Julie Bjornstad, WFRC.
Jory Jotter, WFRC.
Marion Townsend, WFRC Staff.
All right, well, thank you, everybody. Welcome today. First item on the agenda, we have our minutes from the March 15th, 2018 meeting. Any comments on those minutes? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to adopt those minutes.
Motion to approve.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are adopted. We'll now start off with an opportunity for public comment, or any members of the public who would like to share comments with us. Okay, seeing none, we'll then go to the chair report. First thing I want to talk about in the chair report, you should have a flyer with you. It's up there on the screen. That's the Golden Spoke event that is around the corner. We've been talking about this and planning for this for a very long time, but this is coming up on Saturday, June 2nd, so we're just a few weeks away from that. This celebrates the completion of over 100 miles of safe, separated trails linking Ogden and Provo. So this is a big deal for our state and our region. Utah has been a national leader in outdoor recreation and in active transportation. So there are details on the flyer that's being passed out, but what's happening is Golden Spoke is reminiscent of the Golden Spike, right? So we have the meeting of the trails here. And so we're going to have a ride starting in Ogden and starting in Provo and moving to the center when we meet up at the Jordan River Bridge. You'll see right here the red dot on this flyer. So starting up, and you can see approximate times of where these will start and where we'll get to the different locations. We're going to have people biking from both ends to meet in the middle. Other people will be joining up along the way if you want to join up to bike or run or walk and join up. You can see the different times, or just meet up. If you want to be shamed, you can drive to the location and we'll all look at you in your car. Shame you for getting there by car at the location of the Jordan River Bridge, which is it'll be at about 1:15 to 1:30, but there will be a celebration there at the Jordan River Bridge. It's longer than that. What's the full time of the celebration?
So from 12:30 it starts to about 3 o'clock, and there's going to be food trucks and, you know, events, family friendly. So as you said, if you don't want to ride the whole way, Commissioner Harvey's going to ride the whole way down, right, Commissioner?
Well, it depends on how long that saddle. I'm going to last until I can get the saddle.
But it'll be just people can come to that also and have some fun on what was hopefully a beautiful Saturday.
I'll be joining up part of the way, but I won't be riding the whole way.
What type of shame would you like imposed upon you?
I'm going to park about 2 blocks away and bike in. anyway, it's a big event. Hope you can join us and put it out in your communities. For those of you who are representing city or county government, put it on your social media. Encourage people to come. It'll be a big community event, big celebration. This is a really big deal, and so let's help our residents know what a big deal it is and know that there's this incredible amenity is available to them.
Mayor, I didn't hear anything about paramedics. Yeah. You might need some.
We might need some.
Mayor, can I send regrets on behalf of most of the city of South Jordan? It is our Summerfest celebration that day, and our parade, and our carnival, and our all of it. I am sorry that we will not get to be participating because we have assignments and places to be every second of those minutes that we have. So, sorry.
We understand. Thank you. We understand.
Best of luck to the rest of you.
But for those of you who can join, it'll be a great event, so I hope to see you there.
Hey, Mayor, real quick.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Heather, wave your hand, has sent out information that you can use in your communities to post on your social media, to share with your residents. If you want that again to be helpful to you, we'd be happy to send that around to the committee one more time. So maybe, Katie, we can do that as a follow-up to this meeting.
That would be great.
And thanks, Heather.
Yeah. All right, well, it'll be a big event. Hope to see you there. So that's it for the chair's report. We're going to move on to then item 4 on the agenda, which is the Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision. Wasatch Choice for 2050 is our region's blueprint for coordinated regional transportation, land use, and economic development. This is something that I think we as a state have done well from statehood, and it's exciting to be a part of this vision. I remember when I first started getting involved, I think even before I ran for office, it was the Wasatch Choice for 2040, and it felt like it was so far out there, and how great that we're thinking that far out there. And now here we are, 2050, and 2040 is just around the corner, and it's not as far out there as it seemed 10 years ago. So this is RGC. This committee's been overseeing this process, and we've had extensive engagement over the last 3 years of planning. And now we're at a milestone. So today's a really big moment in this as we look to adopt and endorse the action of the Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision. So we have the opportunity to endorse this vision as a framework on which other plans will be built, including the RTP. So this is kind of a big moment. I think it's not only other plans here at WFRC are going to be built on this, but I know Salt Lake County, we look at this as when we're planning parks and recreational facilities and other things, we're going to be looking at this plan as we forecast the future. So this is really a foundational document for so many other things that are going to surround this and hinge on this. So it's a big moment. We've had a lot of public engagement that gets us to this point. So I'm going to turn it over to Ted now, who's going to outline how we got to this point and various elements of the vision.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right, so we're going to use the website, the WFRC website, as the means to talk about this, so you can see how you can explore this yourself. So if you go to the WFRC website, we call this a splash page. I don't know why, because it's really splashy. We tried to get Van Halen music behind this, but it didn't work. So you click on Learn More. And that brings you to the Wasatch Choice 2050 page itself, which has a number of elements in it, a map, the goals, and some graphics. Now, as the mayor mentioned, Wasatch Choice 2050 is a framework that integrates regional land use, regionally significant roads, transit, active transportation, and open space into one overarching framework that then is moved forward into the details of the comprehensive economic development strategy, the regional transportation plan, and your local land uses in the transportation land use connection, which is a joint program of Salt Lake County, UDOT, UTA, and Wasatch Front Regional Council is there to help you with that. So what we're doing today is checking in and having you tell us Is this in the place where it needs to be to then move into the next stage of developing these planning efforts on this? Now, let's take a walk down memory lane, shall we? That's a rhetorical, shall we? In 2016, we started this process. We got together with MAPS and we brainstormed project ideas and new land use concepts that may not be part of your plans today, or they might be, and how those fit together. So we explored and mapped out concepts. We did a second thing in those meetings in the early part of 2016, which is that we talked about, well, what are the desired outcomes that matter to you and to your residents? If you got in a time machine, what kind of quality of life benefits would you hope to see? And so from those two things, we developed a suite of scenarios, three, and we developed a set of draft goals, which were then adopted by the council in October 2016. And those are over here on this large poster. So that's what happened in 2016. In 2017, then we together looked at these different scenarios and how they perform with regard to those 10 goals and explored them in some detail. In 2018, just this year, as you recall, we had the Wasatch Choice Vision workshops, and in those workshops, there was a draft of the vision that included transportation projects, again, open space, regionally significant land use. And there were a couple of things that were done in that process. One is you reflected on the transportation projects themselves, the land use, and the fit between them. And one of the things you might recall is that we asked you if the land use ideas that are present on the map, is that something that you're interested in taking forward and having a conversation within your community about? And this is one of the things that is a little different from Wasatch Choice 2040, is that we, if we are all collectively going to develop a set of plans that build on that framework, we want to together have some sense that these are things that we each commit to moving forward and implementing. Now let me turn your attention to this poster on the left. These goals that were adopted in October of 2016, they essentially get at what are the things that we all want to have that relate, benefits that relate to the physical form of community. So we don't see things like education and healthcare there, but if it relates to the form of community, it's up there. And then the other thing is that these are things that people can tangibly feel like, okay, this is a benefit for me as an individual. One of the things that we're going to talk about and has been a theme of the Regional Growth Committee conversations this year is access to economic and educational opportunities. And Julie Bjornstedt's going to talk about that in a little bit. Okay. Now, on this Wasatch Choice 2050 webpage, if you click on the box on the right that says Vision Map, it will bring up the Vision Map. The geography of Wasatch Choice 2050 covers the MPO area, where Wasatch Regional Council has the direct responsibility to do transportation planning, which spans from Brigham City all the way down through Bluffdale, and it includes the RPO areas that include Morgan and Ogden Valley, Morgan County and the Ogden Valley, and the Tooele Valley RPO as well. This is also a joint effort with Mountain Land Association of Governments, Utah County, Wasatch County, and Summit County. Wasatch County is an RPO as well. So Wasatch Choice 2050 is not just a WFRC effort. This is an effort that is a multi-county effort. And we're having conversations with the Morgan RPO, with the Tooele Valley RPO, with Mountain Land Association of Governments about how you all want to be part of the Wasatch Choice 2050 eventual vision. Any questions about that? here are the elements of the map itself. So we're going to zoom into northern Davis County and southern Weber County because that's the most important part of the metro area. That was a joke. I mean, it may be. It may be.
Not a joke to me.
Attaboy.
Now, the Wasatch Choice 2050 does not address every land use in your communities, right? It addresses the land uses that have regional significance in the way they affect transportation and are concepts that might entail working together as communities, one to another. So it includes green infrastructure and regionally significant land uses that span a hierarchy from the metropolitan center, urban centers, employment types, employment areas and industrial areas and special districts. Here is what a center is in a nutshell. A center is a place where you experience a mix of land uses in a walkable setting, and the intensity of the form of development is greater than its surroundings. That's it in a nutshell. So it doesn't have to be housing heavy. It doesn't have to be job heavy. It can be whatever you as a community want in that center, but it's a mixed use, walkable, and more intense than its surroundings. So for example, Metropolitan Center is in Salt Lake, is the heart of our region. Urban centers exist in, I have a laser pointer, in this area, in downtown Ogden and downtown Layton. And then town centers, you can see both corridors and bigger areas as well. So Heather, click on Riverdale. And you can see that there's a little bit of a description here about the catchment area of a town center, a little description of what it is, and go a little bit further down, a little up, sorry, just a touch up. It gives you a sense of scale as well. And so know that as you explore the Wasatch Choice of Vision map, and that these, again, are concepts that you've seen over time, that those are in there. So those are centers, and then down here we have employment areas and industrial areas. This is another new element for Wasatch Choice 2050, which is that not every regionally significant land use is walkable, nor should it be. So we can think of key industrial areas in the region, key job areas in general, and those have a lot of value for us and our economy, and we need to think about how we tie in our transportation with them. So for example, in this area, you have the Freeport Center, and this industrial area over here as well, and the west side of, just west of the I-15, to give you an example. So the integration of those pieces with transportation has been built into this. Special districts are places like airports, university campuses, in this case, this is Falcon Hill, that have particular needs, but certainly have regional significance as well. Those are the land use types. Now, what we have done collectively over this 3 years is we have explored how those relate to, affect the demand, and in turn, just sort of work with these three components: regional roads, active transportation, and public transportation. Looking ahead, after endorsement of the Wasatch Choice Vision, the regional transportation plan process will refine these project ideas. We'll also phase them. When will they generally get built? But at this point, the concept is, what general transportation project ideas make sense based on the wants and needs that we have looking out in the future that fit with those regional land use types that we've explored together. Now, if you go back, Heather, I forgot to talk about green infrastructure. Green infrastructure, these are major, these are not city parks. On this map, this does not refer to the city parks in your communities, but rather refers to larger contiguous pieces of open space that might require coordination between jurisdictions in order to make them happen. It could be a riparian area, it could be a preservation of a farming area, for example, on the far west side of Weber County, that you may want to explore and that we've talked about with communities over time. Okay. So the Wasatch Choice vision is made of goals. It's made of this vision map. And as we reflected on it together with you, that ultimately the map itself illustrates these four key strategies. These are the strategies that ultimately help improve those 10 goals. The strategies are, and I hope you can read these, one, provide transportation choices. Help us have real choices in how we get around. Support housing options. We know that that's a critical issue today and will be moving forward. Preserve open space and link economic development with transportation and housing decisions. In other words, think about how those pieces come together and work well. And in that last part, that is, do they fit even on individual streets? Do they support each other? Do we think about taking advantage of transportation and leveraging the economic development potential that they have? Do those elements come together to help us get to destinations, access to opportunity? So that is an overview of the elements that we are seeking some feedback on today. Before we get into the next steps of plan development for the regional transportation plan, the comprehensive economic development strategy, and as you consider these in your local land use planning as well.
Well, thank you. Any questions or discussions to this plan? This is great. I will just say, Salt Lake County, we call it our future we choose work versus the future that chooses us. And I think this is similar to what we're seeing here is, the future that would choose us if we just continue to allow our community to grow without putting any thought into it. We know we're traffic congestion and gridlock and air quality problems, and these problems just cascade over the next 20 or 30 years. But what I love about this is it's, you know, the more we can develop town centers and urban centers and things like this, we decrease the need for transportation. If people can satisfy their work, recreational, you know, desires within close proximity to their home and they don't have to drive downtown, that's good for our roads. It's also good for the tax revenue in a lot of our communities. Salt Lake County would love to have you. Let me just clarify that. We want you to keep coming here. But also, we know we don't have the transportation infrastructure today to support a lot of that into the future. So I think it's a very thoughtful way and sustainable way to think and to grow. And it really will be the future we choose versus the future that chooses us. And that's a future where people have free time, not stuck in traffic, but at home with their family or out at dinner with their spouse and not sitting in a traffic jam, you know. So I think it's a great vision. I don't know, and I love that we've incorporated a lot of active transportation, which has to be more of our future and is so affordable relative to roads and looking at transit also. It's a strong vision. Reed.
Yeah, real quick one. I wondered this in the past and finally reached the part of my brain where I'm articulating it. Should we, under the TLC program, give priority to planning efforts, or do we already that will make these centers a reality? And either give priority or actually, of the $1 million or so that you have available, set aside some money for the specific planning of individual centers that are not moving forward on their own.
I would say, I think I haven't been on the TLC selection. Salt Lake County is proud to augment the TLC so we can have additional funding in Salt Lake County because we think it's important. And it looks like, from what I've seen of the projects that have been selected, a lot of those are planned town centers that we've envisioned in the Wasatch Choice for 2050.
Yeah, that's entirely right. And I would just, Megan, I don't know, Megan is our TLC program lead. Do you want to, generally speaking, I'll say, Megan, that we consider this is your vision that you have, that you have built. And there's no one size fits all. So it's not one strategy that applies to the entire region. What may work in West Jordan may be different from what works in Kaysville and, all different parts of the region. And so this reflects your priorities and preferences to achieving what you want in your future. And then with that general guidance, we try to take that in all of the work that we do. The regional transportation planning, the prioritization of projects, and the TLC efforts, and try to help have all of those programs implement this broader vision. So with that general comment, Megan, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, just diving in a little bit more quickly. So the ultimate purpose of the TLC program is to implement the Wasatch Choice and support local government needs. And while we know those needs change and we want the program to be flexible, we do have within our selection criteria already a specific, is this a Wasatch Choice Center? Has this community identified this to us as a Wasatch Choice Center? And actually we're in the process now that we have more finite program goals, we're in the process of going and making the selection criteria even more pointed to make sure that we're, we're flexible, and if it's a new center, a new idea, visioning that's popped up, that's great, but also if it's on the Wasatch Choice preferred scenario as a Wasatch Choice Center, we want to make sure we're responding to that and helping those communities take that center through the steps of implementation. I would love to be, especially while we're in the process of updating those criteria, I'd love your feedback.
I would add to that maybe a point, and then I want to make a comment, but I guess a point is to recognize that this is a living, breathing document. This isn't, we're not just going to lock this in a vault and, if you come back and say, here's a need that we have, well, sorry, you're not on the plan, talk to us in 2060,
Definitely not, yeah.
Yeah, this is a living, breathing document that, that we're looking to endorse and you look at it as a foundation. It's a meaningful document, but it doesn't mean that we can't accommodate for new circumstances that arise, or new circumstances or or approaches arise that we can adapt.
Can I add on to that briefly? Absolutely. So refinement will happen on this over time, but I also wanted to note that this is also bringing in conversations that include the Point of the Mountain vision and your general planning efforts. So this is aimed to be an umbrella that brings in your ideas in whatever way you want to address them. But part of what is, I think, cool about Wasatch Choice 2050 is if there's a new transportation project idea, let's say there's a bus rapid transit and nobody's thought of it. Well, it's definitely not in your plans then yet, right? And you might be able to make it happen through a change to your plans. So it's an opportunity to think through getting something better, both in terms of a transportation improvement, but perhaps quality of life, than other plans have afforded. So that's what's cool about it. But again, just the main point is that it's an opportunity also where we've tried to bring in pieces like the Point of the Mountain vision throughout.
Yes.
Go ahead, Jen.
Seemingly rare opportunity to fully endorse what my friend Professor Ewing has said. And secondly, if I could make a comment, I guess just to give props to WFRC, since I've been engaged with them over the last 20 years, they've certainly done amazing planning, but I would say that this effort, they definitely upped their game in terms of the interaction with local government. This land use plan is great, and we can all agree to it at a certain level, but if there's no intent to actually implement it, then we're going to continue down the path that we've continued for the last 50 years. And I think it really speaks to the engagement with local government and getting commitment from local government that these are things that we're thinking about in the future. And I think as we implement elements of Senate Bill 136 and corridor planning, that gives us another opportunity to reinforce local government's commitment to the development of corridors and land use that supports those corridors and the transportation infrastructure that supports all of that. So just props to WFRC, and it's a great plan, and
I want to add to that. I mean, we're trying at Salt Lake County, at least, to be to make sure that the decisions we make are cognizant of this and even support this. So, you know, we don't look at this as just the plan for roads in the future, but it's how are we growing as a community. So when Salt Lake County is looking at where we're going to put a park, or, you know, when engaging with our cities on conversations about tax increment financings and project areas like that, one of our criteria is how does it line up with the Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision? If we're making a decision, if we think it's a silo, when we make a decision about tax increment financing to create jobs or housing or other density in an area that doesn't have the transportation infrastructure, it's going to have a ripple effect of problems that are caused down the road. And so, not to say, again, circumstances change and we can refine and re-envision as community needs change, but Salt Lake County is more and more building the Wasatch Choice for 2050 into our analysis of other things, be it a performing arts center that we're doing in Taylorsville. Mayor Taylorsville's not here, but we looked at what are the transportation, how are people going to get to that, because we want to build a facility where it can get maximum usage, that residents, easy for residents to get to that, whether it's through active transportation, transit, and roads, all of the above, that it's going to get the best usage because we built it in the right location. And I think in the past we might have looked and said, well, this land here is more expensive, so we're going to build our rec center over here, without recognizing the fact that it's more expensive because it has better access to the community we're trying to serve, and the less expensive parts of land, we're going to have to build a bigger parking garage, and you know, people are going to have to drive to it. And so in Salt Lake County, we're building this into a lot of the decisions that we make. So it really is an important and a foundational document, not just for where UDOT's going to build roads, but where we're going to choose to put jobs, where we're going to choose to put parks, and all of the above. Any other comments? So I would entertain a motion to the RGC recommend to the WFRC Council endorsement of the Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so this is
I have one piece here that I want to just make sure is communicated before I affirm that.
Okay.
And I don't know the process, sorry, but there's a place up on the freeway, if you go back to the 5600 South and I-15, there's a lot of growth with Falcon Hill project developments. Is that on there? I don't see it in the color pink. There's been a lot, and it's happening right now, but it doesn't look like that it's
underway.
Yeah, it's underway. It's being built, and it's already gone. I tried clicking around on this, too.
Are you asking about Falcon Hill?
Falcon Hill.
Falcon Hill is noted as a special district, and maybe we could have called it something different, but we worked to build in the growth assumptions based on conversations with them of both where they're at now and where they anticipate going over time.
So to understand, for me, you have it on your radar. The growth is included in your mapping and everything that you have here. And I'm a colorblind guy, so I guess that works.
I put it out. This is Falcon Hill here.
It's special
district.
Okay. Yeah. Special. That works. Then I'm on the line.
Yeah. Okay. So I think this is a moment to, I don't know, pop your champagne or your Martinellis and celebrate. So I just want to take a moment to congratulate WFRC and WFRC staff. This has been, you know, the level of public engagement has been impressive, very thoughtful to pull together, you know, almost, you know, a significant percentage of the state's population across multiple counties along the Wasatch Front, an incredible vision that will do a lot of good as we grow and continue to change. You know, we're going to grow and we're going to change as a community, but we don't want to lose the nature and heart of who we are. And I think this is a great vision to then start building upon. It's a good foundation to start building upon, you know, other aspects of our growth, thinking about that. So congratulations.
May Mayor, I'm sorry, I just feel compelled to respond to that just very briefly. Thank you. Our philosophy, at least as a staff at WFRC, is that there is no such thing as a WFRC success. For us, our success is in helping you, our communities, and our partners achieve your objectives. And that's why the fact that you guys have recognized that there has been so much engagement on this, and as Ted noted, the Wasatch Trail 2050 is not just a WFRC thing. It's a UDOT, a UTA, a MAG, a cities, a counties, you know, all of our partners, everybody is involved in this. And so we will only accept that applause on behalf of all of the engagement that has happened and for all of our partners in our communities. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, so as we talked about, this is a foundation. There are going to be plans that will be built on this foundation and also tools that will help us to build upon this foundation. So the next item on the agenda, I think, is one of the incredibly innovative tool that we've been working with WFRC to flesh out and develop that I think will be a powerful tool as we work to build on this foundation in a community and a region that's growing and changing so fast. So one of the region's 10 adopted goals is access to economic and educational opportunities, or ATO for short. We love our acronyms, I guess. So in other words, that's how easy is it for us to get to the diversity of destinations that we value, be it work, recreation, education, whatever. So Julie Bjornstadt is going to discuss the efforts that WFRC is taking to ensure that ATO is being applied to individual project discussions at WFRC. Again, this is another area of highlight that Salt Lake County is looking at this too, when we think, where are we going to put a community arts center or a recreation facility or whatever? How accessible is this to people? You know, it would be a waste to put it in a location where people, it's inconvenient for people to get to it. So it's a tool that we're looking at, not just for growth purposes, but modeling even some of the many decisions we make. A health clinic, where are we going to put a health clinic, and some of those decisions. So Julie Bjornstadt's going to walk us through that, and then Jeff Harris from UDOT will discuss their recent research initiative conducted with WFRC that also explores ways to use ATO to inform decisions. So Julie.
Okay, thanks. Before I begin, Ted's a little disappointed we didn't do a standing ovation for the endorsement. So I don't know if anyone wants to stand and do a standing ovation with me. No, okay.
Laura's going to start
Thank
the wave.
Laura. So today we're just going to provide an update on ATO, how we're using it in implementation, and then looking for some feedback from the communities on how you guys might use it and how we can better assist you in that. So you know that we have 10 goals, they're up there. Mayor McAdams just mentioned them, and that one of our key goals is access to economic and educational opportunities. In case you missed it, we shortly call that access to opportunities and ATO. So I'll use those interchangeably, but I mean access to education, economic and educational opportunities. And then what we're talking about again is how many destinations can we get to in a reasonable time? As Mayor McAdams said, we're talking about jobs, services, education, recreation. So there are kind of three main ways that we can go about improving ATO, one of which, these are housing, is by locating our destinations near housing and housing-rich areas. So how can we change our residential communities to be closer to destinations? We can also look at it from a lens of doing transportation improvements to increase that span of service from destinations to get to more housing and more people. And this can be done through improved street connectivity, more frequent transit service, safer walking and biking, or just anything that will speed up your transit or your transportation choice. And then third, we can take advantage of our existing transportation infrastructure and locate our new land use choices near existing freeways, existing roads, existing transit stations to help better connect our services to our residential units. Okay, so one last thing to think about when we talk about access to opportunity is that access is dynamic by mode. So if these are school locations, we're talking about walk access. So this is showing you a 15-minute walk access around these elementary school or elementary schools, and we can see how far we can get. There are some areas that maybe can't walk to school, but when we look at drive time,
hey, this Julie, is just this is actual data in Central Salt Lake County, right?
Yeah. So okay.
This is Mill Creek, South Salt Lake.
Okay.
We can see how much more places, how far we can drive in 5 minutes, which is pretty much the entire area. So the point here is that when we talk about walkability and bikeability, those destinations we're talking about are going to be more localized. So we're talking about parks, schools, services. And when we talk about drive access, we're typically talking about regional jobs, just because we can get inherently further when we're driving than when we're walking or biking. So we've come out to you before, both here and under vision workshops, to talk about system level access to opportunity, meaning we looked at the entire transportation network as a whole, and we looked at how what the average for the region is to be able to get to jobs. We've done this mostly to compare future scenarios. So looking forward to 2050, how would sort of our no action scenario compare with our current RTP compared with the vision that you just endorsed? And the differences and where those locations are happening. But now as we move further through the Wasatch Choice 2050 process, and we're looking more into how we prioritize and implement our transportation investments, we'll be looking less at a regional scale, how is the system working, and more as how are individual projects improving access to opportunity. So how we're doing that on the phasing side is looking into the future using our travel demand model. We've projected where households and jobs are going to be in the future, whether that's 2030, 2040, or 2050. And we can look through our travel demand model on how projects impact travel time. So how an individual improvement, whether that's a widening project, a new construction, or operational project on the roadside, or a new transit line, or better improved service, changes how many destinations we can get to in a given area. And when we marry that with where our jobs and our households are, we're able to see which project gives us the biggest bang for our buck by where the most people access to the most jobs are improved. So we're doing this for all of the modes, whether that's the roadway side, transit, or active transportation. When we look at transit and active transportation, in addition to looking at where they can get to jobs, we're looking at a more localized network to say, where can they get to destinations such as the schools, the recreation, grocery stores, things that matter, sort of are more specialized than just regional jobs. And then we're also moving into how we can do this on our programming side. So our short range plan, our transportation improvement program. And there we look more at a near term lens. So we'll probably spend less time in our future travel demand model and more time on the actual localized network. One of the reasons we don't use the actual localized network for the future is that's just really hard to project where cities are gonna build those local roads, because as a regional agency, we look at collectors and above. But the point is that we have household data, we have job data, and we can see the impacts of an individual project on travel time.
Julie, do you care if I just quickly interject? Part of the reason that we're spending time on this is that as an industry, the transportation industry is in the stages of figuring out how to do this kind of analysis. So when we think about congestion, we have decades of experience in understanding how a new transportation project might affect congestion or transit ridership. But for this new approach, which fundamentally helps us understand the interaction of land use and transportation, the industry as a whole is figuring this out. And so this is part of what we've been working on, and part of the reason why we wanted to explain it, where we're at, and also just check in with you about what are the key considerations that you have, the assumptions that you want us to take, the things that matter to you that we can then build into that analysis.
And then further, so this is showing four different sort of destinations, schools, grocery stores, parks, and transit stops, and the walk access between each one. And the point here is that while we're using this for our regional projects, and we're looking at regional access to jobs, You can do this on a more localized level. And so here you could layer these three walk sheds to see where the most important places to build new sidewalks are or to do sidewalk maintenance, for instance. And to Mayor McAdams' point earlier about the locating your land use decisions, on that bottom one where it's the transit stops, that's the walk shed away from the transit stop. And so maybe you look at that and you say, if we're planning a new performing arts center or we're planning a new office building, where should we put that? And maybe those are in areas where we can better utilize the existing transit network. But we, as a regional agency, like I said, think regionally. You guys are the local communities, and as you're using ATO, the needs that you have to look at that at a more localized level may be slightly different than how we're using the tool. But we're in the process of building toolkits and data sets for you guys to be able to utilize this measurement. And what we wanted to get feedback from you on is how you think you might use it, how we can help you achieve your goals, and sort of what your needs are in this area.
Yep. I don't know if you're looking for feedback right now, probably not as much from me as from the others, but I just want to make one comment that I think is important as each of you think about this access to opportunity within your own communities. I said before that there's no one size fits all. And so you might think, oh, well, Julie just mentioned that, well, if there's existing transit service, like Mayor Dandoy, you're working on in Roy, you have a front runner station, and you're already thinking, and the TLC program has been helping you with this, of course, well, are there ways we can take advantage of that to locate mixed-use development or jobs or whatever close to that front runner station? That's an efficient approach. But then you might have a community that doesn't have that existing system, and I want to make clear that doesn't mean that if there's access to opportunity, we use it as for decision making, then that means, well, if you don't have it already, well, then you're out of luck. In fact, the way to think about this is, what kind of changes could be made if there is limited access right now to opportunity that then could increase that, right? So I think the way, and we've had a lot of conversations about this, thinking about what are the investments or decisions that could be made at a regional or a local scale that would have the biggest impact on increasing the sort of percentages of access to opportunity, even if the numbers aren't so great, but in your communities, how could you increase that? So it can be applied in a more rural area, suburban, or urban, sort of across all of those with a different kind of approach.
I want to maybe give an illustration there. There's a company that I visited a couple of years ago. And they're a manufacturing company, a high-tech manufacturing company, and they were toward the facility. Seemed like a great employer, and they're starting entry-level jobs for, you know, and they train and everything. $18 an hour is what they pay, and they said they have 200 jobs that they can't fill. And so, and this is a company that we, as a state and a community, incentivized to relocate to Utah. They said they have 200 jobs they can't fill. They actually said they had 200 more jobs that they would move here from the Bay Area if they could fill the first 200. And they pay $18 an hour. What they said one of the challenges was is their location didn't have good transit access. So they were pushing for some shuttle or something else to get there. So I sat there. It's a great company, and I'm not going to use their name because I'm not critical of them by any means. But I thought, we incentivize them to come, we subsidize a bus, and then we're going to subsidize housing for people who can't afford the place that they live. Versus if we had had an access to opportunity tool and we said, you put this company in a place that's saturated with good paying jobs, it maybe doesn't add anything. But if you moved it 10 miles away to a different part of Salt Lake County, and I think of a community that we've done a lot of work with is the community of Kearns, that has the longest commute times in the valley, the worst access to public transportation, and I think in this community of almost 25,000 people, there were something like 200 jobs located in the community. You took this facility and located it there, you would reduce the need for transit because access to opportunity metric would be improved by 200 job people who had a short drive to work. We'd bring down that commute time. We'd actually, the housing in this community would be affordable at $18 an hour. I think the threshold is affordable at about $13 to $14 an hour right now. So you bring in an $18 an hour job, you've got families who have time now, the parents who have time to spend at home with their families, they have discretionary income, they have healthcare, they have all these things that could have been solved. You know, all these other social problems that we treat as silos, like healthcare, could be solved with just an access to opportunity and putting our jobs in the right place. And so I think this is such a powerful tool, again, not just a transportation tool, but to look at some of the social problems we're trying to solve that may not be social problems. They could be solved with just thinking how we grow problems. And so I think it's a powerful tool to use on so many levels. And the other thing we know is we're looking to fund our transportation infrastructure of the future, and there are various options in front of us right now. I think the most depressing thing is these options aren't going to be easy to tap into. They also, it's not enough to fund the transportation infrastructure we're looking at. So we have to think of ways to spend less, and that's going to have to be through the way we grow and putting, you know, reducing our needs for transportation infrastructure by putting people where the opportunities are instead of widening roadways so people can drive to those opportunities. It's going to have to be a combination of all of the above, but I think it's a powerful tool. And I, you know, this is a real life example that I've thought through. If we had had this tool 10 years ago, we could have, with one shot, solved multiple problems for 200 to 400 people, which, you know, you do that over and over again, and by 2050, we've had a real impact on a lot of levels. Yeah.
Thanks, Mayor.
Yes.
I'm speaking from the Salt Lake City side of things. We just finished our transit master plan, our first one ever in the city. And we're looking at the granular way to really implement a workable transit system. And I could see where if we were focused on Salt Lake City here, we, in our far west and east sides of the city around Foothill and out into Glendale, Poplar Grove, we could see, we'd probably see some food deserts on the grocery store side, but we'd see a lot of housing, schools, jobs even, and yet the transit stop is going to be quite sparse in those reaches of the city. And we're looking at the TNC model of connecting that first mile, last mile through ride sharing and the city subsidizing that. So I'm wondering about the increasing complexity that Ted mentioned a bit in the modeling side of transportation, but as transit becomes more and more nuanced, that it isn't just about a bus, it isn't just rail either, that the funding is therefore shifted, that $700,000 that we're looking at annually to just begin this first mile, last mile, connecting people with more like a Lyft or Uber situation that the city subsidizes. We're funding that out of our sales tax money that we just passed. So I'm just wondering about the transit stops. When you identify transit stops, another part of that is how frequent are those connections? Is it going where people need to go? And how does this, the ATO, look at the nuances or the complexities of putting in transit that really does connect people potentially and open up the access to opportunity, but isn't the transit that we've thought about from the planning perspective for a very long time?
Yeah, and the transit ATO is a little bit more complicated than the road ATO. The TNC component is obviously a lot more complicated than that. Bert, did you want to mention anything about how we're looking at transit specifically?
And we can, you can get with me after if you want.
Sure. Mention two things. First of all, when we do travel modeling for transit, we're building in things like wait time, and transfer time, and things like that at a regional level. Secondly, you know, you can't take transit in isolation. You've got to factor in getting, you know, the first mile and last mile connections. And so when we build the ability to do the analysis that we've kind of illustrated up on the screen, it has to be multimodal. And it has to factor in, you know, be able to factor in the ease with which you get to a traditional transit stop, whether that's the walking, biking, or maybe a rideshare scenario. The rideshare piece is new to us. And we're working on trying to integrate that. And I think a lot of that will be driven based on what happens in the policy space in the local communities, such as the example you gave.
We'll be your guinea pig.
Thanks.
Let me make, Chairman, let me just make a comment. You bring a fascinating concept to the table.
I think I just heard you say that for the betterment of the county, and obviously you look at all the cities involved in that, if the decision is that we should collectively say that this particular city has more of the resources available to accommodate a particular need or a requirement, that we should basically forget about our borders and start looking this more from a unified approach that simply says, what's in the best interest to our community? And if that community says that there's a resource capability over here that can benefit from that, that we don't be parochial, we should simply say, let's consider looking at other alternatives. And if that's the case in Salt Lake County, could we use the same argument in Davis and Weber County? And if I was to share with you what's going on in Weber County in terms of capacities and capabilities and opportunities, and you had that in your back pocket, could you also suggest this, is that maybe, just maybe, we ought to be looking at taking some of those opportunities coming to the state, and maybe the location is not necessarily in Salt Lake County, but could also be in a Davis or Weber County, or vice versa. And if we were collectively as an organization willing to share with the Wasatch Front Regional Council our ideas, collective ideas, that simply says we're looking at this and this, and let them then be kind of a, for a better word, a holding pond of these ideas of what we can bring to the table collectively, that could not they help be a broker if we find opportunities to share, hey, there may very well be in Salt Lake County this capability, they got the resources, they got everything you need in place, and then don't think of it to be a Roy or a Weber County, but rather our community here opportunity, and provide them the best service we can for economic development. And try that approach. Because I'll tell you what, I've not heard anybody talk like that.
I think that could this could be that powerful tool that helps us just see more clearly, see through the clouds of across the jurisdictional boundary, right?
Exactly.
If what we know is Salt Lake City needs people for jobs, and you show us that a Davis County transit stop is within the ATO umbrella to get those people to those jobs, and all of a sudden, right, that becomes a Salt Lake County effort, right?
And we can fill that requirement,
yes,
provide affordable housing, and use mass transit to help us to get the people where they live to where they need to work.
Because what I want to, I look at the problems that are in front of us, whether it's housing, healthcare, jobs, you know, and there's not enough money to solve each of them in a silo. Transportation to solve them in a silo. So the best solution to affordable housing is exactly what you're saying, to look at the cost of housing in Davis County is less expensive than it is in Salt Lake City. That has to be part of our affordable housing, and we do it without a government subsidy. I mean, the subsidy was building front runner, right? And then all of a sudden we may be able to solve our problems better with that, or at least a portion of the solution could come from that. Absolutely. Did it early?
So I think these conversations will continue. We come back to you every month or every other meeting, talk to you about AETO. For now, I want to give Jeff an opportunity to talk about what UDOT's doing to vary economic development, land use decisions, to your prioritization, and the research that you guys did with the State Smart Transportation Initiative, looking at how to operationalize AETO.
Yeah, I think, you know, UDOT used to have as one of its strategic goals economic growth and economic vitality. The challenge has always been how you measure that, and how does a DOT or transportation agency actually say that a road or a transportation improvement affected overall economic vitality. We have struggled mightily with this, and the entire industry has struggled with this. Traditional cost-benefit analyses look at user benefits, delay time. They don't look at overall economic vitality. Economic impact analyses don't work, and so now with Senate Bill 136, we've been asked to incorporate that into our prioritization process. Can I give a quick update on that, by the way? So that was one of the requirements. We have just selected our consultant team. Let me back up a little bit. For everybody here, I sent out the link to our assessment of our current prioritization model and after last RDC. That is available to go in and look at how we tore apart our existing prioritization model and said, how can we improve it? This was prior to Senate Bill 136. So we put out an RFP about a month ago for consultant services to help us update that model.
We gave our MPO partners the opportunity to review, all of our MPO partners to review that RFP, and I will say, for your benefit, there was one MPO that actually provided comments on the RFPs, and that was Wasatch Front Regional Council, and it was Ted. And so thank you very much. So we invited Ted to actually participate on our selection committee. We selected that consultant this week, and we are in negotiations right now. So we are moving forward. We hope to give notice to proceed, and then we'll get marching down the road and engaging all of our partners in the development of that prioritization model. So our interest in accessibility, to a large extent, is that's perhaps one of those tools, a way to bring in the economic development component. And Mayor, I think you articulated it very well, right? Can we use accessibility as a way to gauge ultimate economic impact from a transportation improvement, not only locational decision about the business, but how transportation supports that? So we're looking at that, and I have to admit, at the very beginning of the accessibility discussion, I was skeptical in terms of, yeah, we can talk about accessibility, but it's really not going to change our locational decisions about where we live and where we work. I've come to realize, though, that if we as communities start planning around accessibility, that opens up a tremendous amount of options for people to start making different rational decisions about where they live, where they work, et cetera, et cetera. And with the work that we've done with WFRC, we invited them in to work with us on the research project. There are so many ways that we can use accessibility. This was one way we can use accessibility. Think about from a freight perspective, they call it dock-to-dock time. That's one of the major economic or major cost factors for warehouse and distribution. Accessibility tools can help us assess that. In another way to use that tool in terms of gauging an overall transportation improvement ability to affect our economy. So there's any number of ways to use the tool. So I know we're probably over the time. I would also suggest that on the accessibility side, you know, we're looking at number of potential employees as a potential measure. Bottom line is we haven't figured out how to do it yet, but accessibility is we think is going to be a major part of that. Do you want me to go into any more at this point? I mean, on accessibility, I think we've gone over the time, but okay, I'm good.
Well, I think it's just incredible that to have a partner like UDOT who's thinking about this as well. You know, this is a tool that probably wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago, but in the era of big data, it's pretty cool what we can do. And I think the cross-jurisdictional collaborations, and even within Salt Lake County, I look at Mayor here from West Jordan, and I think it changes. You know, we know there are communities in our county that are, talk about food deserts, I think we have job deserts, and we have housing deserts. And so, you know, our conversation with Salt Lake City is, we need housing in Salt Lake City. There are a lot of jobs, we need housing. Not to say we don't need jobs as well. I look at West Jordan, we need jobs, right? There's a lot of housing, we need jobs in West Jordan. And it helps, I think, give greater context to our conversations about how we partner and what we do, and we can be more deliberate, more, I think, cost effective in how we invest in our community.
One more component of this, the other component of this was land use and our prioritization model, and how do we incorporate land use into that model? And I think going back to Wasatch Choice for 2050, right, to me that sets the overall structure of, at least in the urbanized areas, of how we want to develop. And I think then we go into corridor and area planning. And the whole point behind corridor and area planning is to really develop, one, at a more granular level, understand context. And what we mean by context when we talk about this is economics, community values, what they're trying to accomplish, transportation, risk and resiliency in the natural environment. Then what we do is we sit down with communities and we say, okay, given the context, and we did this on Foothill Boulevard, we've been studying Foothill Boulevard for 15 years, right? And we keep spinning around it. And what we did this time differently, Salt Lake City is the lead, is we actually came together, we understood the context from everybody's perspective, and we set goals for the corridor that everybody bought into. Once you set the goals, then you can start talking projects and what solutions are. And I think we did that, and we actually came up with an answer for Foothill Boulevard. So that's what we're trying to do with corridor and area planning. Start with our MPO regional plans, Wasatch Choice for 2050, solidify that agreement at a more granular level with local government,
you are buying into these goals and objectives for that corridor. Then you say, here's the land use that we're going to develop in order to support those corridor goals. We will base our transportation solutions then on that, on those goals and on your land use. And so that's how we can incorporate land use into our transportation investments. Everybody agrees, everybody starts developing and supporting that overall goal, great. We give you extra points in our prioritization model. Rather than a stick side, let's do it the carrot side. And let's start supporting, and again, it doesn't have to be a particular land use. It has to fit the context, right? Not every place is going to be a transit-oriented development, right? Gotcha. So that's what we're thinking. We're going to engage you as our partners as we continue to develop the prioritization model.
One quick thing to just add in, a lot of what Julie showed is the interaction of land uses, homes, jobs, key destinations, and transportation. But the mayor's example and Mayor Dandoy's comments relate to economic development. I just wanted to mention that Wasatch Choice framework, but one of the plans that builds off of that is the comprehensive economic development strategy. So this very concept that I think might build off of your great comment is how does access to opportunity, how do we use that to think about the needs and opportunities of different industries, what industries need and what kind of workforce matches with them, and those kinds of locational pieces as well. So this is, I think, inspiring to us as well, and we can carry that conversation to the Economic Development District and then report back to you on the economic development piece of this conversation.
Can I add one piece to that, right? Say in long-range planning in the past, we really haven't done planning in that way. We call it contextual-based planning, but it's also market-based planning. If we go into an area like the Northwest Quadrant of Salt Lake City, we can't even begin to talk mode, or we can't even begin to talk facility until we understand the context that we're trying to support. If we go in there and we understand that, we should not plan the same way in the Northwest Quadrant that we do in the Southeast Quadrant of Salt Lake County. They're completely different markets, completely different context. We start with context, and we set goals, then we can say, let's have a modal discussion. How does multimodalism play into the overall strategy? Then we can have a facility discussion. And we can ultimately come up with a system plan for that area rather than a facility plan for that area.
That's great.
That's where we're trying to go.
So I think we can all see this is the congratulations again to WFRC. This tool is continuing to be developed in an incredible way, and I think the application of it, you know, there's so many ways it can be applied. So we look forward to continuing to move along with this. So we have 20 minutes left. I'm going to move us to the next item on the agenda, and that's the point of the Mountain Commission update. It was mentioned that this is kind of a hyper-focused subset of the Wasatch Choice for 2050, that we know some significant changes are happening in that area. Earlier this year, the Point of the Mountain Commission, which I'm a member of, approved the vision for the Point of the Mountain area. And Envision Utah has facilitated the process for developing this vision. So today, Ari Bruning from Envision Utah will give us an overview of that vision and next steps for the Point of the Mountain Commission. And it's, you know, I apologize to those of you maybe further north. I think this is a vision that not only we can learn from the example of how it's being done, but it is something that will see a ripple effect to some degree statewide.
All right, I'll try to only take 20 of the next 20 minutes.
Okay.
So in the legislative session in 2016, the legislature created the Point of the Mountain Development Commission and tasked them with looking at not just the Draper prison site, but the whole area, basically Sandy to Lehigh, and to accomplish all of these things. So basically the idea was, this is an area that's already booming. We have tech jobs going there. How do we continue that boom and make sure we maximize economic development while at the same time keeping it a great place to live where you can get around without sitting in congestion all the time? And if you've ever tried to get from Thanksgiving Point to the other side of the freeway at peak hour, you know why that might be a concern. So we were hired along with a full consultant team to work on this vision. Let's see if I can get to go. There we go. So we started with this phase one, listening and research. We went around, listened to the cities, the communities, stakeholders, and then we did scenarios, took those to the public,
got feedback on those, and then we released the vision in January. And now we're moving on to phase three, which is looking at how to actually pay for everything that's in that vision. And also as part of that, we'll be continuing to work with Wasatch Front Regional Council and local communities and so on, figuring out how to move the vision forward. So if you look at the population projections, our planning horizon was 2050. Salt Lake County is projected to have 1.5 million people. Utah County is projected to have 1.3 million. So think about all of them trying to get back and forth between this narrow bottleneck right here. And one thing we found early on was that 2/3 of the traffic on I-15 right here at the county line, the trip is neither beginning nor ending in this area. They're just passing through. So that's a kind of a thorny problem. What do you do about that? Let me see that. So as we worked on it, this is the vision that we came out with. It's got 12 signature elements. We passed it out. On one side is the regional, smaller regional, sub-regional, I guess, vision. And then on the other side is a vision for the Draper Prison site. It's got those 12 elements and a drawing of how they might play out on the ground. And you'll notice as you look at that, it has these mixed-use centers in blue, for example. And you compare those to the Wasatch Choice draft vision that we just looked at, they're remarkably similar. So it's almost as if we coordinated a talk.
Almost.
So I just wanted to didn't want to go through all 12 signature elements, but we wanted to talk about a few things that we found. One of the elements has to do with these mixed-use centers. We did a baseline scenario of what happens if we continue to grow as we've been growing. And we found that by 2050, about 11% of households are within a half mile of the center. In the preferred scenario, we got close to 2/3 within a half mile. And that matters a lot for traffic outcomes and for a lot of other things as well. And one of those things is the housing mix. We did a survey of, I think it was about 2,000 high-tech employees in the area, and we asked them, what is your ideal community that you would live in, assuming you could find it close by and afford it? And you look at that pie chart, and your first takeaway is they're all over the place. Some of them want a suburban community, low density. Others want a very urban kind of place, and everything in between. And so as we looked at the vision, we said, how do we make sure we provide for all of their wants and needs? And interesting, the ones in yellow there are something other than a residential-only community. So that's almost half. We want something mixed use. We also looked at the jobs housing balance, and this ties right in with the access to opportunity. Areas in red here, so this is the county line. Areas in red have an excess of jobs, essentially, more jobs than housing. So basically along I-15, that's where all the jobs are. Areas in green have more housing than jobs, so the west side. And that causes an issue. Every morning, people drive east to their job. In the afternoon, they drive back west to their house. It causes congestion. We also have a north-south housing imbalance here. So we're looking at, well, how do you get jobs out here into these green areas? And how do you make these centers here truly mixed use, so you have some housing there? So that was part of the vision. And as we did that, we've calculated how many trips in this area don't have to leave the study area. And in the baseline scenario, it was about 1.4 million trips a day. And in the preferred scenario, we got an additional 400,000 trips that don't have to leave. So that's big for traffic congestion infrastructure needs for the entire region. So even if you don't live in this area, you want the trips to stay there, right? You want them in your community. And then we also modeled, this is for the entire four-county Wasatch Front, vehicle miles traveled. And what's interesting is, in the preferred scenario, we actually assumed we attracted more jobs because we got it right in this area, which causes more housing. And so even though we had more jobs and housing, substantially more, fewer miles driven. So think about the impact of that on the quality of life. One of the signature elements has to do with connected street network. So if you look at the left there, that's what the Institute of Transportation Engineers recommends for a street network, everything from the local streets up to the freeways?
This is our actual street network, and that connected street network makes a big difference for a lot of things. First of all, it disperses the traffic, but it also makes a big difference for walking and biking. If your only way to get around is on these big streets, lots of traffic on them, you're less likely to walk or bike. That's part of the vision. One of the results we got was we modeled how many people rode Front Runner every day. This is all up and down the Wasatch Front. Today it's about 14,000 a day, I think. In the baseline scenario, it was about 28,000 in 2050. We got it up to 100,000 people a day. So we're getting freeway level ridership on Front Runner. Part of it was these mixed-use centers. People can walk to it easily. Part of it was we put in other transit routes that connect to it. Part of it was we actually tested what happens if you took the fare off, but it was free to ride. Turns out that makes a big difference. And then we also assumed that it would be double tracked, so the train comes every 15 minutes, which also makes a big difference. And then between everything we did, this is the good news, bad news, travel time from the Draper Prison site to Provo. We also look north. North doesn't look too bad. But when you go south, where most of the growth is, the bad news is by 2050, in the afternoon, it goes from 28 minutes to get to Provo to 86 minutes in the preferred scenario. If we manage to chop 20 minutes off of that, bad news is it's still 66 minutes. So, of course, our study area didn't go all the way to Provo, so. I don't know if anybody finds that quite concerning or not, but none of you are for me. We also looked at the prison site itself, and one of the big ideas that came out of this was this kind of research catalytic district. There was a lot of interest in attracting some kind of research institution, potentially tied to our institutions of higher education, to help catalyze job growth in the area, as well as this mixed-use town center where people can get around easily, an office district, lots of jobs. So here's our pretty picture of what that might look like. Got a transit line through the middle of it. There's your town center area. There's the office area. And then more of an aerial view. So this is just a vision level because this year, the legislature created the Coy the Mountain State Land Authority, which has not been appointed yet, but will be soon, I understand. And they will be in charge of figuring out how specifically to develop the prison site, what the process is for bringing developers on board and selling land and so on. So that's a high-level overview of the vision. There are 12 signature elements. There are actually goals and 126 strategies that go with that. We decided not to bring you all an entire binder full of stuff, but you have your one sheet with the summary. And it is a vision. So we're at the vision level. There are lots of different avenues for implementation. One of those, for example, local general plans. Also, the long-range transportation plan is one of those. And so on. This would be this new state land authority for the prison site. And as an example, we've been working with Wasatch Front Regional Council and local communities about incorporating some of the transportation ideas into the long-range transportation plan. And so some of the things you'll see on that, the vision, the Wasatch Twist 2050 vision, for example, a north-south boulevard connecting Porter Rockwell down into and then exploring the idea of light rail line west of I-15 through the prison site. Still work that needs to be done on all of these. But we're working with WFRC on it. So anyway, that is the summary of the Coy the Mountain Vision and where we're at. I don't know if you want to add anything, Ted.
We've really enjoyed the opportunity to work with Envision Utah. We all, transportation agencies, UDOT, UTA, Mountain Land, and us, worked with Envision in the development of the Point of the Mountain effort overall. And Ari talked about how we've been now working to integrate it into starting with the Wasatch Choice 2050. If you go and you explore the Wasatch Choice 2050, you'll see concepts that are relate closely to the, I think even you guys call it a sort of cartoony lines. So you'll see it sort of move from vision slowly to plan, starting with the Wasatch Choice, and then some of these concepts have some challenges, but more importantly, they're just the details require digging in and talking with communities and studying some of the technical aspects in more detail. So we're going to work on them piece by piece through studies over time. And, but the bottom line here is that we've really enjoyed the partnership.
I was just commenting to Andrew, but I think maybe one thing we could put on here as well is access to other recreational opportunities. LA County is doing a lot of work in that area already to build out some regional parks, a big regional park in Bluffdale, another in South Jordan with the Welby Park. We've just finished one in Draper. And I think my sense is this area is actually open space, has significant open space already, not the 700 acres of the prison site, but there's significant open space in the area. And I think it might be helpful to map that and quantify that in a maybe even an access to opportunity type metric of how well is this area covered with access to recreational open space type opportunities vis-a-vis other areas along the Wasatch Front. My gut tells me it's pretty good. Especially when you look at proximity to both the Oakers and the Wasatch on top of that. But that might be an interesting one. I do hear a lot of people talking about that and what is the open space plan for here. My sense is it's pretty good, but maybe we connect it directly into this visioning.
Yeah, you have the Jordan River with the Jordan River Parkway, yeah. You have Corner Canyon area, you have
all of that.
And Camp Williams is trying to build open space around its borders and so on.
So it might be nice to just have a call out of that to just highlight what's being done and that that's connected to this vision as well. Any other comments to this? Well, thank you. Thank you, Ari. That's incredible. Appreciate the support.
Mayor?
Yes?
Just a comment. This Senator 136 appears to me is energized. The very thing we've been talking about today is put emphasis on doing what we've been talking about. And I think that's very helpful because now it's almost a commandment to everybody get on board and do it. When you say, Andrew?
I completely agree, and that is not by accident that that's the way Senate Bill 136 turned out. A lot of the kind of discussions we're having here today and have been having in this committee for years then flow into ideas that are incorporated into state legislation with all of our engagements. So I think you're entirely correct, Commissioner.
Yeah,
good discussion today.
Yeah, very interesting discussion. All right, so the last item on the agenda is action requested on the 2015 to 2040 RTP Amendment Number 6. So the Regional Transportation Plan is an element of the Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision. Jory is going to present the proposed Amendment Number 6 to the current plan. Today we're being asked to just start the process. So this isn't finalizing it, we're just kind of kicking it off and releasing it to the public for a comment period. So Jory.
Thank you, Mayor. And my goal is to get you out of here on schedule. So let's jump into this. Great reminder that the Regional Transportation Plan is directly connected to the Wasatch Choice 2040 and the Wasatch Choice 2050 visions. We developed the plan every 4 years. The plan was adopted in 2015. The new 2019 plan will be adopted next spring, almost a year from now. So we'll be moving forward on that. Periodic adjustments are needed, so this is our sixth amendment. We've taken into consideration financial constraint, air quality components, and we have a public process, so it's not being developed just in-house or with you only. And we try to do it once a year, and hopefully this is our last amendment to this plan, whereas anything else needing to be amended potentially can be rolled into the 2019 plan. We're at the process right now here where we're reviewing it with the Regional Growth Committee, asking you to let us take it out to public comment. We're going to go out to the COGS, Salt Lake and Weber COG. We only have projects in those two counties, so we'll be meeting. We are on the agendas for those two in the upcoming weeks. We'll have a 30-day public comment period that's matching up with the Transportation Improvement Program and the state's Transportation Improvement Program, along with UTA's process from June 30th to August 4th. So we're kind of doing a multi-agency, multi-program public comment period. We'll ask, if we get any comments, we'll bring those back to you in August and then ask for a recommendation to take that to council at the end. So we have six projects. They total about $188 million. Don't let that scare you, because this first project has funding. It's an amendment to include a northbound general purpose lane on I-15 from Bangor to 215. And this project is going through an environmental process right now, and they think that they can do this project along with collector distributor roads, frontage roads, interchange configurations, different things like that. And so this is not a new addition. They already had this funding program. It's just an added element to it, and should have pretty limited impact to the right of way and environmental process of that. So it's a new project to phase one. Second project, these two are level three recommendations, so they would both kind of require the air quality conformity piece. As a project that's already in our regional transportation plan, it's in phase two, and it's to move it to phase one, 4700 south from 40th west to 5600 west in West Valley and Kearns area. It's a widening project from 3 to 5 lanes. And so they're looking for possible local and STP funds at a cost of $15 million. There we go. 146 south. This project's also in our plan, but it's a rescoping of the project. The current project is a widening project on from Porter Rockwell to about the bridge or 1000 West in Bluffdale. Bluffdale now wants to do an operational project pretty much from I-15 all the way to Redwood Road, and then realign the connection of 146 South to Redwood Road. Also, improvements included with this would include bike and ped infrastructure along with curb and gutter. And they think they can do it for around $6 million. They're looking at Salt Lake County Corridor Preservation, STP, and local funds for this project. 700 South is a Salt Lake City project. This project is on 700 South. It's a new project, but it would include a railroad bridge out here by the intermodal hub, and then realignment of 700 South to match and kind of get away from the new bridge on 5600 West that is currently funded by UDOT.
I'll keep your fingers crossed, please. We have an infra grant in for this project. It also includes 5600 West widening from 201 to I-80, and it includes the expansion of Salt Lake Garfield Western's interchange facility in that area, and we're hoping that we hear something very quickly. And it would actually fund the bridge portion of this. And again, this is all crucial to opening up the Northwest Quadrant, better opening up the Northwest Quadrant to allow growth of warehouse distribution.
Infra grant is a federal grant program.
It is, yes.
Next two projects are up in Weber County. This is a project in Hooper on 5500 West from 35th South to 5500 South. Operational project, new to the plan. They're looking to apply for local STP, so the Weber County funding, about a $4 million project, but they want to kind of complete the road, curb, gutter, sidewalk type of project on that project. And then the last one is up in Plain City on 2800 North, North Plain City Road. They're looking to complete the road. They're coordinating with Far West, and it would go from about 4800 West or 4200 West to the SR-126 through Plain City. Fairly small project, again, around $7 million. So these are all fairly small amendments to the plan for that. Part of the process that we wanted to bring you, and I don't want to jump into all this detail, but I can give you a little bit of an overview, is all the considerations that we look at while we review these amendments to the plan. And these match, you can note, as Ted highlighted the goals, these match to similar goals for the 2050 Regional Transportation Plan, the 2019, including safety. We don't have a model that projects safety, but we wanted to at least report the existing safety index that UDOT has for that. We review vehicle hours traveled saved, and this is based on Reed's comment of not just looking at the road, but a catchment area. So this is all VHT that connects to this project. We look at project readiness. Is the project ready? Does it support the Wasatch Choice 2050 centers? Existing clusters, so do we have an existing GOED clusters that these are tying to? The ATO that Julie talked about, we review that. Is it multimodal? Does it impact or benefit vulnerable communities? And on this case, all level three require air quality conformity. For the level two projects, a little bit shorter because of the smaller, usually minor arterial collector type projects, but we review safety, the VHT, and we don't look at all the traffic on these projects. We just look at within a 1 mile buffer of the roads. Are they providing additional connectivity? Is the project ready to move forward if it's being asked to be in phase one? What work has been done to get up to that point? And then does it support the Wasatch Choice 2050 Center? So our ask, again, reminder, we'll be going out to the COGS that these projects are in. We'll have a 30-day public comment period, and then we'll come back in August to the Regional Growth Committee and Council for a final approval. But I believe there's language in the packet for a motion, not only to send this out, but the air quality conformity memorandum 38 that accompanies this. So.
Yeah, just a quick background on the I-15 project. We brought this to you a year ago as an information item. The intent of this was originally is to solve the weed problem at 90th South between 90th South and I-215 northbound. If any of you have traveled that to PM Peak, it's quite crazy in that area. The original intent we defined as an operational project. It was essentially a flyover from south of 90th South over and across the traffic coming on at 90th South. Upon further analysis, it basically was determined that in order to really make it work in that area, it needed to extend down to Wegener Highway. The intent was, if it would have just included auxiliary lanes, which is a lane between interchanges, then it wouldn't have risen to the level of a capacity project needing an amendment in the RTP. But technically, we do have an extra lane in there that goes from the Wegener Highway interchange all the way to 90th South, so it does cross over an interchange. So technically, then, it is a capacity project, and in our mind, technically it is, given the regs and what our air quality conformity agreement says, but truly it's an operational project trying to fix that weave on the south end of the valley. If that helps, Reed.
That makes people feel better.
How to make you feel better.
Any other discussion to that? So this is an action item, so I would entertain a motion.
I'd like to make that motion.
Okay.
I make a motion to release for public comment both 2015 through 2040 RTP amendments and the air quality conformity determination is found in draft air quality memorandum 38 as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so finally, is there a motion passes? Finally, any other business to bring before the RGC? Yes.
Mr. Mayor, there's another WFRC funded point of the mountain study, transportation analysis that you're funding with WSP. And I'm wondering if at some point it might be good for us to come in and talk about some of the recommendations coming out of that. This would be some future meeting of the Regional Group Committee.
I think that would be great. Among other things, that they analyzed parking demands and parking things like that, that I think the local governments can think about what they want to do. So.
All right, so our next meeting is August 16th. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you. Basically,